Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah, and this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. Okay, weird. I never speak like that. So I don't know why I just said that. But anyway, I am currently in Orlando, Florida, and I'm here for the week of Passover, and I'm here with some people who are very close to me and my boyfriend, Ben. So it's been a really great week so far, and I'm so happy to be here. But before I jump into Peak and Pit and introduce the guest for today, I do want to just speak on BetterHelp. BetterHelp is the sponsor of this podcast. And as you know, or as you may know, BetterHelp is an online professional counseling service. So if you are looking for therapy, you can just go onto betterhelp.com and find yourself a therapist and have one within 48 hours that you could start speaking to. So like, I know in my experience, finding a therapist takes a lot of work, and usually it takes a really long time to find one and then actually start a session. But BetterHelp is really fast, really efficient, and they have thousands of professionals on there for you to choose from. So if you are looking for 10% off your first month of service, feel free to go to betterhelp.com/itsfine. That's betterhelp.com/itsfine for 10% off your first month. You know, I used to do therapy in person pre-COVID, and then ever since COVID started, I started doing it online. And I honestly don't know what I would do without it. So highly encourage. And moving into Peak and Pit. So I really hope this sound is okay. I didn't bring my mics or any of my equipment to Florida with me. So I'm doing this for my AirPods. So let's pray for the best, hope for the best. My pit of the week is, I don't even know, to be honest. I've had such an amazing week so far. Knock on wood, thank God, all the things, all the disclaimers. It's really just been an amazing week. Ben and I drove up to Orlando over the course of 3 days, and we've been road tripping. I would say maybe my pit was, you know, nope, don't have one. So I'm just going to go with my peaks for today. And I think that's fine because I get to make up the rules here. But my peak is that I'm in Florida and the weather's so nice. And you probably have already heard me talk about how much the weather impacts my mood. So it's been really, really great. And just really spending quality time with friends. And it's been super, super meaningful and beautiful and nice. So very happy about that. Moving into today's guest, we have Lane. Lane is a couples coach, and I'm so excited for everyone to hear more about her and what she does and the difference between coaching and therapy. And honestly, like we just had such a great conversation. And I really loved it. So I'm really excited for everyone to hear it. Lane is super relatable and she's so approachable, and that's what I loved about it. It's like if you need a couples coach, it's not this big scary thing. She just makes it so approachable. So I hope you feel the same way. I hope you learn something, take something away, and enjoy the episode.
Elaine, how are you?
I'm great. It's good to be here. How are you?
Great, great, great. So excited to have you. So just for some background, and like obviously you'll tell the listeners more about what you do and you know what our topic is today, but Lane is a couples coach, which is super interesting because I think a lot of people tend to have questions about relationships, but sometimes like couples therapy can seem kind of intimidating or scary. So I'm really excited to dive into like what's the difference between therapy and couples coaching and how you got into it and everything. So Lane, how did you get into couples coaching? What is couples coaching? And, you know, have you always been interested in that? That's kind of three questions in one. So why don't we just start with how did you get into couples coaching?
Such a good question. Thank you. It's a bit of a circuitous route. I didn't study anything even remotely related to couples coaching. I studied chemical engineering in my undergrad, and then I went into Yeah, I went into the tech industry for 7 years. But I've always been super fascinated by relationship dynamics, romantic dynamics. And I think the real spark for me started a few years before I left the tech industry. I was in a relationship, a long-term relationship. We were living together and we were trying to decide if we were going to get married or not. And spoiler, we did not. But I was looking into like every resource available to me, and I found Esther Perel and her book on mating in captivity, and fell in love with her, her philosophy, her job. I had this like moment of, oh my God, people do this for a living where they work with couples and like help them figure out their problems, and people trust. It's like kind of, it was astonishing to me that people got paid to do that. And I had been feeling sort of dissatisfied in the tech career for the tech industry for a long time. Very stimulating, very fast paced, but I just felt unfulfilled by the mission, and I'd been wanting to do work that was more meaningful to me. So I ended up quitting during COVID. And wow. I was originally planning to go to grad school to become a therapist. Ultimately, I even got accepted to a program, but decided to defer because of the pandemic, and got certified as a life coach instead, and started my own business. And I knew from the very beginning of doing that, that I wanted to specialize with couples. I've just always found that dynamic to be, for whatever reason, like I feel the most gravitational pull to that. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it for a couple of years now and loving it. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. That's so awesome. So how did you like start, getting clients, and what was that like for you when you started? Like, I guess like I'm trying to think, like when you start a career path, you know, usually you don't know anything, but you can like lean on other people. But when I think about this career path and couples coaching, you know, you're kind of, you just have to jump right in and hope that you can help people. But what was that like for you at the really beginning?
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's funny, the coaching space particularly, and I have some theories as to why, but there's not that many couples practitioners to turn to. There's only a few of us who like are out there in social media saying we're couples coaches. So I really did feel kind of alone when I started. And the first step for me was reaching out to friends and family and saying, hey, this is my new life pursuit. These are the steps that I'm taking to get certification, to get the skills that I need to be good at my job. I am looking for clients to basically practice on, and I won't, free of charge. And if you have a good experience, I would ask that you send me a testimonial. But if not, I'll take the feedback and hopefully incorporate that and to become a better practitioner. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't looking for friends or family, but I was looking for friends of friends or family, because I didn't want that like ethical conflict of interest. So I started out with a bunch of free clients and went from there and got referrals from there. And I also was working to build up like my social media presence, which mm-hmm. I'm sure, as you know, is almost a job in its own right. So, but it really started with like reaching out to my community. And then once I got a few clients under my belt and a few testimonials, it just sort of grew organically from there.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. So, okay. I have so many questions. Oh my
God. I'm here to answer all of them.
Okay. I think first of all, what is the difference between couples coaching and couples therapy?
Yeah.
Like, is it counseling? Is it like, what's couples coaching?
Great question. And to be honest, there are a lot of different answers. Coaching is not a regulated industry. So it's a little bit the Wild West out here. I am extremely ethically concerned. Like I try to make sure that I have a very clear description of the clients that I will and will not take on. And I don't bite off any more than I can chew, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So for me, what it means is I work with clients who are not in emergent situations, are not undergoing any form of mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is actively struggling with a severe diagnosis of PTSD or bipolar disorder, I'm immediately referring them out. For me, that's just like a boundary that I wouldn't cross. Mm-hmm. And I guess like practically the difference, there were certain modalities that like I don't enter. So I wouldn't do like individual trauma work in a couples coaching session as maybe a therapist or a psychologist would, which at times can feel limiting, but at other times is like really liberating too, because I'm not constrained to like CBT or any of the other modalities that therapists are constrained to. So I think practically I focus more on what's happening in the room, the present, the dynamic that I'm currently working with, and then also planning for the future. Then say diving into the past and working with like inner child or like past traumas.
Got it. Okay. So you do go into like childhood.
I'm saying I do not.
I was like, that's why I was surprised, because I thought you said you didn't, and then at the end I thought you said you did. So I was like, oh, No, you totally didn't. It was definitely me. Okay, so you don't go into childhood. So like, what does it look like? So like, if someone comes to you and says, you know, like, we're not struggling with our mental health per se from like a diagnosis perspective, we just, what do people say? Like, are people like, we just need tools to communicate better? Like, how does it work?
I get a lot of different concerns when people come to me. A really big one people always say is communication. It's like a very broad umbrella, and I always have to dive into what exactly does that mean, because when people say communication, it's like that could be like everything we do in a relationship is communication of a form. A lot of the time I see couples that are stuck in what feel like and what are unhealthy conflict patterns. So like a blame and defend cycle or like an escalation cycle. I've also worked with couples who struggle with cultivating desire over long term. So maybe they're a few years into the relationship and neither of them is feeling particularly interested in sex lately and they want to rekindle that flame. I've worked with couples who are recovering from infidelity and they want to continue forward in the relationship, but don't know how to move past this like major hurt and like how do they process that event. Another interesting issue that I've worked with before is like emotional distance. That's a really, really tricky one. So couples who have been together for a very long time, let's say 10 plus years, but have been feeling emotionally like alone in the relationship for a very long time, don't have a lot of like love between them, but really want to stay together. And like, there's a lot of respect, but just not a big emotional connection. So it really runs the full gamut.
Wow, that last one is so interesting and something I really haven't put much thought into. So do you find that like no matter what couples are going through, if they're both willing to put in the work, there's hope for them? Or do you think that there are times where you're just like, this is not going to work out?
Such a tough question. But
I know. I'm just really intrigued by this topic.
It's a good one. I think here's the reality. People are autonomous. And they can make whatever choice they, I mean, you know, assuming it's like within the legal bounds of the social fabric we live in, people can make whatever choice they want. And so, yeah, I think for the most part, any two people can decide to be together for however long they want to be, as long as there's not like abuse or any other like legal concern. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the easiest path or the healthiest path for them. I do think like couples come to me and I like to say that my job isn't necessarily to keep them together. It's to help them reckon with like what the truth of the relationship is and like really understand what's going on and then move forward based on the reality of that. But like, let's say for example, a couple where there's a ton of emotional distance, which also I should say like I'm very heavily Esther Perel influenced, but I'm Gottman trained. So the Gottmans are these psychologists in Seattle who've done a ton of clinical research on relationship success. And I have taken a lot of their certification. I'm not Gottman certified, which is like only designated for therapists, but I've done pretty much everything but that. And I basically, like they have said before that couples that struggle with emotional distance is one of the hardest challenges to come back from. Because underneath that distance, very likely is a lot of historical pain, either inside the relationship or predating the relationship that just hasn't been addressed. And it's really hard to emotionally connect when you feel like the elephants of your past are sitting in the room. And so a big part of moving that couple forward is like naming all of the historical elephants that are in the room and asking the question, is this something we need to process? Like, is this something we need to go through and really say, here's how I felt. Here's what my perspective on that situation was. I need an apology, or I'd like to make an apology. Here's how we'll avoid that in the future. And once you've cleared the elephants, once like that processing's been done, then you can start doing work on, okay, well, how do we bring intimacy back into the relationship?
Wow. Wow. Wow, this is so interesting. There's like so much I haven't even thought of before. And I'm sure that when you started learning this, like you it probably opened your, when you started deciding that you wanted to do this, did you even know how much there was to know? Do you know what I mean? Like when we start learning things, we realize how little we actually know about the topic.
Yes, 100%. I still to this day am surprised by things that I'll read or like statistics. And I'm I try all the time to just continue to expose myself to more voices in the space because mm-hmm. I think it's really important. Like something I see a lot that I'm sure I do to some degree, but I try to be really conscious of is people labeling like behaviors and relationships that they would not prefer as unhealthy. And really like what is unhealthy to me as a practitioner are like they're very clear boundaries. There's like emotional and physical abuse. There's manipulation. There's, which I think would be a form of abuse. But for the most part, a lot of everything that falls within those boundaries is sort of a matter of preference. And so I try really hard not to project like my own relationship preferences onto other people. So a great example is people, experts on social media or whatever, will make comments about like what is a healthy amount to communicate with your partner, how often you should be checking in. Mm-hmm. And for me, having seen couples that just like run the full gamut of personality styles and traits and attachment styles and cultures, that can vary significantly from relationship to relationship, and it will be healthy in all instances as long as both partners are happy. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the reason I try to always expose myself to as many voices as I can. And yeah, I'm sure that I'll be learning about this for the rest of my life.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's really how it is with any field or topic, right? Like we're always learning something new. That's so interesting. When you started learning about couples and relationships more and even like helping other couples in their own lives, like did it impact your own life in any way? Or like, were you taking what you learned for your own relationships?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It definitely impacted my own life. So something that I originally struggled with being open about, but now I have like been more open about is I'm currently single. And I think it's like, I understand the irony of being a practicing couples coach as a single person. But I've been in many long-term partnerships. So I reflect a lot on like my experience in all of those relationships. But I would say where becoming a couples coach has affected my personal life is a little bit in the dating realm. People have strong reactions to me being a couples coach, and it's either strongly positive and like excited about somebody who thinks a lot about relationship dynamics and like has a lot of curiosity about that, which for me is like a very green flag. Like I would hope that my future partner is interested in the work that I do. Mm-hmm. But then also a lot of people I think are really turned off by it. They don't want the mirror held up. They don't really want to be analyzed. I get that. That's fair. I just think that that's been a big change. And then the other big change I would say is that at parties or at social gatherings, people now believe that like they have full license to tell me all of their like dirtiest secrets or like all of their most intimate, you know, struggles that they're facing with their partner. And I've had to learn to be like, hey, this sounds really hard, but I'm off duty. Like I am not currently practicing. So that's been a big thing as well.
Wow. Does it change the way you like date even? Like when you're out dating, are you looking for certain things? Like when you see couples and you help coach couples and you give them tools for like healthy communication or like ways to improve their relationships. Like when you're dating, are you kind of like looking at the person across the table in a certain lens? You know what I mean? Like I know that for me, I'm really into mental health, right? And I've also dated a lot and I've had a lot of dating experiences and I've had long-term relationships as well. And I learned so much from that, but almost like I hyperfixate on things because I'm like an anxious person and I just like, whatever. So like, and I am currently in a relationship, but for a while when I was dating, like it almost was too much how I was like looking to see if this person like communicates well, which is important for sure. But I almost was doing it too much. Like, how do you react if I say this one thing? Or like, if we disagree, like, are you getting mad at me? Like, you know what I mean? And it's, I don't know if it's too much. Does it impact the way that you date and like see people?
I think yes. I'm sure that it does in a couple ways. So the first way I'll identify is I'm actually like pretty well versed on the science of chemistry, like how two people feel that there's like a romantic spark with each other, in my opinion. And like, this takes all of the poetry out of it, which is a little bit of the downside of my job, but I try to keep the poetry of love alive in my work, but I also know all of the science as well, which is like, when you're feeling that like chemical high of meeting somebody, so much of that is like biological pheromones, neurotransmitters flooding your brain, like dopamine and serotonin. You feel so connected, but it's really not indicative of like a long-term healthy relationship and partnership. And for me, that is what I'm looking for. And so if anything, I would say it's influenced my own behavior in that I've stopped looking so much for that spark. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The fireworks. And I've started looking for something that feels solid, something that feels like what I call generative. Like it feels like as I put energy in, I get more energy back. Mm-hmm. I look for self-awareness, of course. And for a big one for me too is curiosity. I think I spend so much of my day asking other people questions that like if I get to a date and I'm again in the position where I'm like driving the conversation, asking all the questions, it's just exhausting. Like I want somebody who's as excited about me as I am about them. So I feel like those are some the ways in which it's changed. The other thing I would say is sort of like the upside of my work. I mean, there are a million upsides to my work, but one of the upsides to my work is that I get to bear witness to some of the most beautiful, like amazing connections and stories that people have built together. I'm so honored by pretty much every single client I've ever worked with and like what they trust me with. But some of these people have the most like, I don't want to call it fairy tale because it's not like they've had struggles, but they just have these really rich, beautiful stories and they have so much laughter and so much joy that it's like, I feel like we can be caught up in how love sucks and like there's so many failed dating stories. But I'm always, whenever I'm working with a couple, even if it's a couple that's struggling with something, I'm always looking at a pair of people who've had a love success in some capacity. They found each other. They love each other. They want to work on the relationship. They want to stay together. And so even though I'm seeing a lot of relationship problems, I'm also seeing a lot of like a lack of jadedness, like a belief in love every time I work with a couple. If that makes sense.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. I never even thought about that, like, that outlook, because in my head, I'm like, well, you're coaching them because they're struggling. But like in the same time that there's a struggle, there's also a beauty in like not giving up and being like, we love each other. And like, I think that's something like, not to get too personal, but that's something I've actually had to relearn, is not relearn, but learn for the first time. Because in all of my past relationships, like when times got tough, the person on the other side was not like, let's sit here and talk this out, or like, I love you and like, I'm willing to just sit here and hear you out and you'll hear me out. And like, not for show, like really being in it and saying like, we respect each other, we love each other, and like, let's talk this out and hear each other out. And then by the end, you feel like a sense of relief of like, wow, we really just like did this and we talked it out. And like, I had to learn, because I am the type of person who absolutely hates conflict. Like when I am, and that doesn't mean that I won't fight. Like I grew up in like a yelling family, right? Like I come from like a loud yelling family.
I love
but
that.
In my whole life, like anytime that I had like a fight with a friend, or cause like I'm anxiously attached. So anytime I had a fight with a friend or anything, I would like catastrophize it in my head and be like, well, we're never going to be friends again. So I kind of related that to a relationship. I'm like, well, if we're going to fight, then like that obviously means it's not going to work out. And I had to learn that like, just because you disagree, you can disagree in a healthy way and then move forward and learn about each other and then keep going. And it was only until I met someone who was like, this isn't a big deal, we're just disagreeing. And I'm like, but doesn't this mean like something really bad? And he's like, no, like we just don't agree on this. And like, it's okay. I love you. Like, we're going to get through, like, we're going to, and then like later we're like, what do you want for dinner? And then we just move on. And I'm like scratching my head. Like, I'm like, but then like, literally 3 hours later, I'll be like, are we good? And he's like, we were good 3 hours ago. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, like, I guess my first question is like, do you find that people who struggle with like anxiety come mm-hmm. to you and like maybe one person is anxiously attached and one person is secure and they're like trying to find like the anxious, because that's me. Like, I'm the anxious girl that tries to I'm trying to become secure, and like the guy I'm with is secure, and like it's really right. hard to like fight these internal, you know, like my brain is telling me like start a fight, like you know what I mean, like see if he'll stick around, and he's like yeah, still not going anywhere, and I'm like but
you know. I love it. Yeah, I do. And I identify with that to some degree. Like, I also am somewhat anxiously attached. I gotta say, I really like the sound of this guy. He sounds like a good dude.
So good. Yeah, he's amazing. He's like, not going anywhere. And I'm like, but why? I'm like, don't you want to run away? He's like, no, still here. I'm like, okay.
Right. I mean, I think, okay, so there's so much there. But I want to start with, there's an ingredient there that I love and I look for a lot in relationships, which is the intention to stay together. The intention, it's very partnership minded. It's like, well, we're a partnership. This is just a hurdle. We just have to figure out how to get over the hurdle so the partnership can continue. But there's another perspective I think that a lot of people get into, which is like hurdles happen and they're like, oh, this is a test. If this doesn't go well, this partnership is over. I'm out. Whatever, right? And that's not partner minded. That's like individual minded. It's like, I got to protect myself. I don't know. And I've been there and I did that all the time. And I'm laughing to myself because wow. the voice in your head that's like, I got to start a fight. I did the same thing. I really, especially in my younger relationships, particularly when I wasn't feeling close, because yeah. conflict is sort of a form of intimacy. And yeah. like it forces you to really get into it with a person. And it's not a, like, I do not recommend this as a couples coach, would not recommend if you're not feeling close to your partner to start a fight. I'm just laughing because
it never works. Like you don't feel like you don't leave being like, Laya, we're best friends. I'm just like, why did I do that?
Yeah. So that would be my first thing, is like that intentionality, that partnership mindedness is such a good green signal to me in a relationship. I look for that a lot in the couples that I'm working with. Mm-hmm. As far as that like anxious attachment goes, it's amazing that you found somebody who's secure and can like really speak to that anxiety and be like, we're good. You don't have anything to worry about, because the alternative would look like, I don't understand why you're always so worried about us. This is so ridiculous. Why are you making a big deal out of this? That would be right. a response that would actually fuel the anxiety and make it right. worse and worse and worse and worse until eventually that relationship, if not treated, like probably separates, because right. the person who's talking to the anxiety is just ramping it up. Which I think a lot of us end up finding partners who do that. And then we're confused about why we just continue to feel progressively worse. Not that you shouldn't take accountability for like your own anxiety that you bring to a relationship. I certainly try to. Like, I try to be really conscious of the fact that I can sort of tell, and maybe this is through a lot of inner work and therapy, but like, I know when my brain is like shifting into a more anxious gear. Like, I can feel it. I'm like, okay, we're not operating at normal same. Status quo. And so
same. I'm like, here we go. What am I going to do now? Yeah.
And so I try, and I think it's very helpful. I try to vocalize that as much as I can. I try to be like, hey, just so you know, I'm feeling really anxious. Or like, for me, a big one is I have sleep anxiety. I really struggle to get enough sleep consistently. And on a day where I'm really underslept, I'm way more prone to be quippy, short, snappy, grumpy, not my best self. And I will always tell the people in my life, by the way, didn't sleep well last night. Don't put too much credence in what I'm saying today, because I'm just not the best version of me. And I think, you know, that's one level of accountability. That's not the only level of accountability, but I think it's a really easy and like attainable step for people to do.
Right. That is so true. Very, very wise. It's hard work. Like, it's really hard work to recognize like yourself, and to, I think it takes a lot of self-awareness. And, you know, if you are someone who tends to get anxious, like, I think putting in the work to recognize like what it is that may trigger your anxiety or may trigger your, I'm the same way. Like, if I didn't sleep well, or I know I'm exhausted, I'm way more prone to being like, sure, and irritable, and like, you know, I get like, and I can, and I know it's coming, and like, I'll be, you know, much tougher, I guess, on my boyfriend, and then like 2 minutes later, I'll be like, you didn't deserve that, I'm sorry, and he's like, it's okay, but like, I know it, like, I'll tell him like, I'm really anxious today, like, I'm really, you know, my body's having like, sometimes my body will do it before something's even in my brain. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I just have a physical reaction to anxiety, and I'll just tell him like, my body's like really having an anxious reaction right now. And he's like, okay, like, what do you need from me? What can we, he's amazing. Like, I just need to, he's amazing. Like, he's like, what do you need from me? Yeah, he's amazing. The more I talk about it, I love, the more
you're also lovely. You deserve someone lovely. So I bet you. He's lovely. Yeah.
Thank you. But he's always like, what do you need from me? And like, everyone I ever dated before him was an avoidant type. Whereas like, you know, if I was really anxious, they'd be like, why? What did I do? Like, it would just always start another fight. And I think like in therapy for so long, my therapist was like, I really want to see you end up with someone who's secure. Like, I really, really want you to look for someone who's secure. And I have to say, like, if you're listening right now and you're like, how do I do that? If you happen to be anxiously attached, you kind of have to go, you have to push yourself to look for something different than what you're used to looking for. Because I would look for that initial spark. And then once the initial spark hits and I'm like, okay, I'm letting my guard down, I'm giving myself to them, like, you know, I'm going to be in this, then they start to pull away. And then I'm like, wait, where did the spark go? And that was a cycle that was happening all the time. So if you go on a first date, and maybe they're not your usual type, but they're kind and they're considerate and they're curious about you, give it another chance. Like, go on another date, because you really never know, you know, if you try and go against what your instinct, because like, if you have like a gut reaction the first time you meet someone and they're like scaring you, that's, maybe that's not a great sign.
Go away. Trust your gut.
Trust your gut in the sense of like, you know, if you're like alarmed by them the first time you meet them and you're like, no, then that's your gut saying, don't do it. But if you're bored by them on the first day, you find them attractive and you're like, okay, they're nice, but like, there wasn't the spark, just go on a second date. Like, just do it. Because at least that's my opinion. Is that what you would tell someone?
Yeah, I love the way, I really love the way you said all of that. And I like the way you prefaced it with like, if you're anxiously attached, because I think I actually don't know if this breaks down by attachment style or not, but I like that you're speaking from your experience of anxious attachment. And I think that I found that to be true for me as well. And when I look back on the relationships that I still really deeply care about, and I'm a little bit odd in this capacity, because I still have close relationships with a lot of my exes. Like, we're still good friends. And I still care about them deeply, but the relationships where there was a lot of respect and trust, which is what I'm looking for in a long-term partnership, almost always started out as a like slow build. And the relationships where I end up getting heartbroken and like damaged are the ones that started super hot. Now, of course, there are always going to be success stories. Like, there are always going to be people out there who started super hot, had the best chemistry, and made it work. And that's incredible. But that is not everyone's path. And I think for me, I've really noticed, and it sounds like for you too, that path often leads to more danger than good. So I love the way you said that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. So I have more questions about like what a session looks like. So like, first of all, do you only see couples together or would you see someone individually?
Great question. I actually do have individual clients, but they're never in relationships. They're usually dating and they're just trying to work through like something like a dynamic that we just talked about, being attracted to somebody who's, you know, either avoidant or emotionally unavailable and like trying to break that pattern. But when it comes to relationship issues, Dr. Julie Gottman said this, and I haven't fact-checked her, but she's like the leading expert, so I'm sure she's right about this. But she said that treating relationship issues in individual therapy is actually a predictor of separation. Now, that doesn't mean that it causes separation, but what it really speaks to is the importance of treating relationship issues in a couple's environment. And so if I'm working with somebody on a relationship, I want to be working with the relationship, not with an individual. Yeah, it's kind of a shocking statistic. And I think I understand it, but like you should be working with an individual therapist on like your self-work, you know, like what's coming up for you, things about your past that you want to deal with, maybe a mental health diagnosis that you want to learn how to manage. But if you're working with your therapist on like a dynamic that's happening between you and your partner, the partner is not there to advocate for themselves. There's only one perspective in the room, and you're not actually influencing that dynamic. You're sort of working only with one person. It's only half of the picture. So for me, I always work with couples together. I would say though that like when I onboard a couple, I start with them together. I get the joint history. I ask them how the relationship started, about the relationship philosophy. And then the next session, and this is usually the only time I'll ever see them separately, I will do two individual interviews just for me to get a sense of their individual relationship history, but also to get their perspective on what's happening in the relationship, if there's something they didn't want to say in the couple's joint session. And also it's really important that I give everyone, but particularly women, the opportunity to let me know if there's like any abuse of any kind going on, because if that, and I have not to date had that problem, but if I were to, I would not treat that couple. I would be sending them a ton of resources on how to get help. It would be a very different thing, but I need, like, from a liability, but also from a their safety perspective, I have to provide that opportunity. But that's the only time I'll see a couple separately. From then on, it's always together.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Really interesting. I'm really surprised about like if they do relationship work in individual therapy. I just, because like if someone's already seeing a therapist, they might find, this is just like how I'm trying to think about it. But if someone's already seeing a therapist individual and they've been seeing it, this person even before they were in the relationship, then they might be more inclined to just like in their therapy session that they have every week, be like, here's what's going on, and not as inclined to go to their partner and say like, should we start something new? Like, should we go see someone together? Yeah. But I guess it's maybe indicative of like, why aren't you working on it in the relationship? Maybe like, maybe it's like, why are you going to someone else to solve it as opposed to the person who should be right across from you? I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah. And I think, well, again, like I haven't fact checked it, so I don't know exactly where she pulled that statistic from. So I don't want to do a ton of speculation, but I would say if it were me and I had a partner, let's just say I had a partner who had been going to a therapist for a really long time. And I mean, it's very normal for people to talk about their relationships in therapy. That's totally normal and fine. But if then the therapist is saying, here's how you and your partner should change your dynamic, and then the partner goes back to their partner who's not in therapy, not privy to the therapy session, and says, hey, my therapist says you're being critical and like you really need to work on this. Like, that's not a dynamic that's really set up for success. There's like a real imbalance of both advocacy, but also information. And to me, that's like, that wouldn't be a good way to go about it.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. That makes total sense. Cool. So do you typically, like when couples come to you, do you see couples coming to you as like a, we're struggling, please help? Or do sometimes couples come to you as like, we're in a successful, healthy relationship and we want to like make sure it only gets better? Like, is it usually people who have already been struggling for a while? Or do you see people who are coming in who are like, we're engaged and, you know, we want to make sure that we have the best communication for the healthiest relationship?
It is mostly the former. So mostly people who are, you know, struggling. But I will say that the percentage of couples that come to me who want to do more preventative work is increasing. And I think that's incredible. My favorite couple, my favorite like celebrity couple is Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell. And they're super, super public about the fact that they've been going to couples therapy like every week since like year one of them dating. Wow. And they stop. And that's part of the reason their relationship like is still together and it's as healthy as it is. And they have so much joy. They just see it as like almost like a vitamin the relation takes, or like a workout that the relationship does, as opposed to, you know, a treatment for when shit hits the fan.
Right, like a reactive thing. Right.
Yeah. And so I see more and more couples doing that. It's also to me like a really strong signal that in a relationship, when the couple is thinking ahead, they have sort of an awareness. It demonstrates an awareness that, yeah, we're super happy right now, but we recognize that like life is long, people change, circumstance changes, and it's very likely at some point we're going to be, this relationship is going to have some form of hardship. And we want to make sure that when that happens, we're equipped with the tool set to deal with it, because we are in the long run here. So that's like, it's a real consideration of the future of the relationship, which is another like very positive signal.
Very interesting. Wow. Wow. I'm like thinking like about my own life and about like my past, and there's like so much to it. You must think about your own life a lot. No, like, do you think about, I mean, I guess I already asked you this, but like, do you ever reflect on your past relationships and like ways that, I don't like the idea of regrets, because I believe that like we all learn things and then that brings us to like the next step in life. But do you ever think about like what you're learning and think back to a past relationship and say like, oh wow, like that was a, you know, that was a healthy thing we did, or like that was an unhealthy pattern, or I don't even know.
Yes, all the time. I definitely reflect a lot on my own behavior. And I think I love what you just said. Like, I don't like the idea of regrets. I'm similar in that regard. I feel like every decision I've made has brought me to where I am today, and I'm happy with where I am today. And so I try not to like live in regret. But I do acknowledge both presently and formerly there are behaviors that I've exhibited that I'm not proud of. And I think something that I've really learned over the years through this work is just the incredible importance of taking accountability. And you've already demonstrated to me on this call that you're really good about doing that. If you can, 2 minutes after you snip, 2 minutes after you snip at your partner when you're feeling anxious, if you can turn to them and say, hey, I'm sorry, you didn't deserve that. That is incredible. Like that
maybe,
is
maybe it's not 2 minutes. Maybe it's like 5 minutes.
Okay, but the fact that it's such a quick turnaround, the fact that you're like able to reflect on that and not like digging in your heels and being like, no, I was justified. I should, you know, like not like building your case for why your behavior was or defend. Yeah. Like, and sometimes
I do that. Sometimes I do that. Sometimes
no one's perfect.
I'm not perfect. Yeah, I'm not perfect.
But something that I've like really taken to heart is learning how to take accountability and do it quickly. Not so quickly that I don't feel the like, you know, pain of having hurt my partner or having done something that like just was not healthy. I think that's important to process that emotion because it's a teacher for us. But I just want to be, I want to be wrong for as short a period as possible. And so it's the moment I've realized that I've done something, I will think about it. I will think through what that must have been like for the other person. And I will either call them, or if we're in person, I will say like, hey, I want to apologize for this. I imagine it made you feel this way. I will try to do better in the future in this regard. And I did not do that at all in so many of my past relationships. And I feel guilty about that for sure.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. So I guess we've been going for a while. So just to like, you know, wrap it up, last few questions. How do you think that relationships play a role in our everyday mental health? Do you think it varies per person? Like some people have 99% of the time their relationship like really positively impacts their mental health. Or do you think like, you know, for the most part, relationships take hard work and it can be tough? I don't know. What have you seen?
I think for the most part, relationships take work. For the most part, like, I just think that the couples that are happy and successful view that work as something they want to do, like something that they, like it's an investment in their future relationship as opposed to like a chore, you know? So it just doesn't feel negative, but
wow.
Yeah, I think
I love that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I really love that.
Good. Yeah. I mean, I really think that the couples who succeed just like view it as something they want to do, like an investment in their relationship. But yes, relationships absolutely affect our mental health. There's like a school of philosophy. I think it was like Freud who first proposed this theory. Don't quote me on that. But there is a school of psychology, I should say, that basically says that our romantic partnership is like a replacement for the primary care provider, usually our mother or our father relationships that we had as a child. And I think if people reflect on, you know, how they act in a relationship, the safety and security they feel, the ability to fully be themselves in a way that we feel like we are normally unable to do so, and except for when we were a child, the ability to be held, like there really is a lot there about the importance of that, like very deep, intimate connection. And because it's so deep, because it's so intimate, it either has the capacity to be very healing. And in like, in your relationship example, I think the dynamic between you and your partner where you can get anxious and your partner can say, hey, nothing to worry about. I imagine that is very healing for you, particularly of like all the former relationships where that was not the case. And like you had every real valid reason to feel anxious because they were pulling away and like also not necessarily treating your anxiety with like kindness or understanding. So that can be very healing, but it can also be very damaging, as I think that example also shows. So it's important. Who you choose is important. How you treat each other is important. There's no way to be unaffected by your most intimate relationship in your life.
Right. Yeah. Right. Wonderful. Okay. So the last question I'm going to say is like, what is your favorite part about being a couples coach? And then obviously I've asked you a bunch of questions. So if there's anything you're like, you know, I know you want to talk about or like discuss, please, this is your chance, your time, opportunity, all the things.
Thank you. I actually have a couple questions for you. And I did have one thing I wanted to talk about, but I think my favorite part, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, but I'll just say it again for effect, which is I think a big reason, in addition to like my love for love, I love love, but a big reason I got into the space is I'm really curious. And I think the privilege I have as a couples practitioner to like sit in the room and really draw back the curtain on an intimate space that we don't normally get to be witness to is such an honor. And like so few people really get that experience in life except for maybe children in their own homes, and it's with one relationship. So I have just like such a comprehensive understanding of like all the possible dynamics that can take place behind closed doors. And it is both beautiful and it can be complex and challenging. But it's like I said, it's just such a privilege to be able to witness that. And I'm very grateful to all my clients for trusting me with that. And I think feeling as though I'm making a positive impact on a person's life. Like there's really, I know that sounds so corny and cliche.
No, not at all.
It's really like, I've never had something that provided me with as much self-esteem as being able to help somebody. So in this capacity, because I think I've helped people before, but I have a real knack for this. And like, it just feels good to be putting my skills, my particular skill set to like the best possible use or how I see it. Mm-hmm. So that would be my favorite. That's like a lot of things, but that's my long-winded favorite part answer.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Question for you.
Sure.
I really admire how open you are about your relationship, about your mental health struggles. I really admire that. And it's something that I would like to strive to do more of in the future. And I want to know for you, like, what is the best part about that? But also, are there downsides? Like, and how do you manage the downsides of that?
Sure. Thank you for asking me that. That's so sweet. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that before. You know, I naturally am an open book. I always have been. And I actually recently have been thinking more about how to not share everything with everyone. I think if I were to like really psychoanalyze why I'm doing it, I think that sharing things about my life with people is like a form of therapy to me because it's almost like a release, you know, like if I'm happy, if I'm sad, I feel emotions really, really strongly. So when I like release it out, even if it's just to a stranger, like it feels good to me. I don't know why, like I'm in therapy, but being able to share something with someone, even if it's something really positive, like it makes me happy and I don't really know why. Maybe I have to dig into that more. So I never really questioned like being open. Like for me, it was always like, of course, like I don't see the issue with it. I don't understand why it's a bad thing. Like when I started this podcast, people were like, wow, like it's so amazing that you're so open about your mental health. Like, you know, isn't that scary that you're telling all these people about what's going on in your brain? And I was like, no, I don't know. Like I didn't even think about it that way. I was like, I mean, yeah, sure. Maybe people will judge me, but I honestly wasn't even concerned about that because my whole goal is to normalize the conversation around mental health. So even if you, the person on the other end, may feel uncomfortable that I'm talking about mental health, that's kind of my goal. I don't feel awkward about it. So it's like, I don't feel that mental health is an awkward conversation. I think it's so important and so necessary. And like the number of people who have told me, you know, oh, wow, you talking openly about this has inspired me to go to therapy. Or I have like, you know, I felt so alone in what I was going through. And like, I realized I'm not alone and it inspired me to make improvements on it or whatever it is. And so that was always my goal. So it's like, I never saw it as like this big scary thing. And if someone feels uncomfortable about it, then it's no offense to them, but it was more about like, okay, well, like, you know, maybe they need to like start thinking more about their own mental health instead of like shaming me for doing it. Like, how are you? You know what I mean? But on the flip side, I think like I have recently been trying to be a little more modest about like my life, and not because it's a bad, I love the positives that come with it. I love the fact that it helps people, like just like you, I being able to help people is like the best thing ever for me and really fills me up. But I also have noticed like I share a lot, and sometimes like when you share things with other people, especially about your relationship, even if it's a positive thing, you like lose that privacy in your own relationship. Or like even if it's with a friend or something that happened in my own life, like something really good happens, my instinct is like tell everyone because I don't see a problem with it. But like I think I'm trying to value privacy a little bit more and not be like weird or sketchy. I'm still an open book and like whatever, but there is value in privacy, especially now that I'm in a serious relationship. Like, and sometimes it's like, it's amazing to be able to just keep something between the two of us. And I'm like, oh wait, I really should work on that more because I'm not good at it. And I want to be, because I think like having like, not a secret, but something that like only me and him know is like such a nice thing. And like, I just don't know how to do it. So, I mean, not that I told everyone everything, like that's definitely not the case, but I just mean like, I just get excited and like, I want to share something. Like, let's say we had a 3-hour conversation about like our needs. And then like by the end, we're like, wow, we feel so good. My first instinct is like, wow, which friend am I going to go tell that we just had a 3-hour breakthrough conversation? Like, you know what I mean? I'm like so happy. I'm like, everyone needs to know that we just did this. So that, I hope that answers your question.
It really does. And it's such a beautiful response. And again, so self-aware, so healthy, shows like a lot of just inner growth, I think. There's an episode, Esther Perel, famous couples therapist, has a podcast called Where Should We Begin? And in that she does live couples therapy sessions and she talks through, it's incredible. So if you actually like want to see what a couples therapy session might be like, that is a wonderful resource. Granted, she is the best of the best. So like not every co-therapist is going to be as incredible as she is, but a lot of them are. And she also talks through like the decision she makes, like why she chooses a particular approach. Anyways, I'm bringing all this up because I just listened to one of her most recent episodes last night. And she really talks about the value of having privacy in a relationship, just like you just spoke about. There's a couple and it's like, it is everything you just described, but on like extreme steroids and like really not healthy and like not, it doesn't sound anything like your relationship. However, in this one very specific component, the woman tells everybody everything. She tells them about all of their sex life. She tells them about all of their financial problems. She tells them about all of their relationship dissatisfaction. And Esther Perel basically makes the point that like when that is the case, your partner never feels alone with you. It's like there's always a chorus of voices that are in the room with the relationship. There's no boundary. There's no privacy, to your point. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's awesome that like you're learning how to put up some healthy boundaries, particularly for your serious relationship. And it's so admirable that you speak so openly about your mental health, because you help so many people doing it. It's like, it's a balance, and it sounds like you're striking it. And I think it's really cool.
I'm working on it. It's a work in progress. And, you know, I just think like I need to figure out how to draw that line between telling everyone like what I spoke about in therapy with my therapist and being open. So I'm learning, I'm working on it, but thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I have a few more questions for you, but I also know we're like long and I'm sure you have things to do with your day. So
honestly,
I
will go for it. This is the time. Just go for it.
Just go for it. Okay. Well, what is the best part about having a podcast? What is the worst part about having a podcast? How do you manage it with your regular, you work a regular job, right? Like you have a 9-to-5. How are you doing this? Can you explain it to me?
Yeah. It's really hard. Like it is really difficult. I also teach yoga. Like I have like this, okay, I have this is like another thing I've spoken about, but I have this complex where like for some reason I don't think I'm an accomplished person at all. Like I can't seem to wrap my head around the fact that like I do things. Like I'm like, what is my life even? You know what I mean? I walk around and I'm thinking to myself, like someone tells me they work at a hedge fund and I'm like, I couldn't have been good at math, like, or whatever you need to be good at to work at a hedge fund. Like I know how unhealthy it is to compare. I know this, and I'm working on that too. But I have struggled in the past with thinking like, wow, like I'm really, you know, I'm not showing anything for myself. Like all these people are doing this and that. It's so amazing, and they're helping people, and they're making all this money, and I'm just like over here, you know. And the truth is like when I actually think about it, I'm like, no, I do a lot. Like I have a 9-to-5 that never ends at 5. I work in advertising full time, like a pretty big firm called DDB, and I on the side I teach yoga twice a week at a studio called Core Power Yoga at 7:30. Yes, I teach twice a week at Core Power at 7:30 a.m. And then I also do this podcast. And like the podcast, here's the thing: I couldn't keep up with the podcast if it wasn't fulfilling something in my life. Like if I just was talking about something that I had no interest in and I was like, okay, I have to do this podcast, like it would never work out for me. The only reason why I'm able to keep it alive and keep going is because my job doesn't fulfill this need that I have to help people. And this podcast does fulfill that need. And at one point I was like, well, maybe I'll just quit my job and become a therapist. And then through time I realized I don't need to like flip my life upside down just to fulfill something. Like maybe to fulfill this need of helping people, I can do a side thing, or I can have a hobby that does it. Maybe I don't need to just, you know, like I don't really see my job as the number one passion in my life. It's kind of like, okay, I like it. It feels good to be productive and motivated. It's good to make money and it pays my bills, but it doesn't necessarily fulfill all like my fun hobbies and passions. And so this podcast is what fulfills that need to like help people and my like psychological brain. And I studied both psych and advertising and I didn't know which route I was going to go down. And so this is like fulfilling that one route. So that's the positive. The negative is like, it's really hard to keep up with. Like the only times I can really record or edit our Sundays, and like Sundays I really need to be like grocery shopping and cleaning. And I also so it's hard, but hope that answers your question.
It really does. It's just like very candid and honest, and I appreciate it. I am about to start a part-time job as a researcher, and I'm also going to be maintaining my couples coaching practice, and I'm nervous about the balance, and I just know that it's going to be, the reality is it's just going to be really hard. And I think being honest about that is really important, and not trying to pretend like it's so easy to do it all. It's not, it takes a toll in certain areas, but also like, good on you for wanting to do something good for the world and helping people. That's very admirable. And I'm super grateful to have been on this podcast. It was really fun. The only thing I want to say is just that if you're in a couple and you're listening to this and you are struggling particularly with desire, I am putting together a course. It's called 28 Days of Desire. And what it will be, it's designed for long-term couples who've been together for a long time and have just lost, I don't want to call it the spark, but they've lost that like real interest in having sex. That is extremely normal. It's almost inevitable. It happens to pretty much everybody. So don't be ashamed of that. And B, my course is designed in such a way that it's like 28 days of small, manageable challenges in a particular order designed to help rebuild that desire, that passion within the relationship. And it sort of becomes like, starts off very slow and comfortable and becomes a little bit challenging in a way that I hope is really fun for couples. But just to keep an eye out for that. And you can find me at Couples Coach Lane on Instagram or TikTok. And that's it. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Lane. This was amazing. And I'm really so thrilled, A, that you came on the podcast, and B, like, that there are people like you helping couples. It's really awesome.
Thank you so much. Likewise. And just having this podcast, it was awesome.
Thank you.
All right.
We'll talk soon. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me at Sarah L. Sassone. That's Unlike Nancy on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, all the things. And the pod at It's Fine, I'm Fine Pod on Instagram. And It's Fine, I'm Fine PD on Twitter. I don't really tweet there or ever. But anyway, hope you enjoyed the episode. Please don't hesitate to reach out with thoughts, comments, and questions. Thank you all so much for listening, and talk later. Bye.